Welcome back to the Hardline. Enter at your own risk.
Welcome back to the Hardline, 590 The Fan, KFNS, 590thefan.com. Also, as always, I would recommend downloading the podcast if you miss any of the segments. Catch all of our brilliance every single day. Go to the Hardline on iTunes. You will know which one it is. And also, download the app. That's where I listen when I'm walking around the gym in the morning. I catch, for now, Clay Travis before 7 o'clock. Then the Ryan Kelly morning after heads right into Frank Cusmano in the Hollywood Casino Press Box. The midday grind all the way up to what we're doing right in this moment, Jim.
Right now, the Hardline is happening.
That's right.
Right now. It's Monday. It's the final edition for 2018.
Yeah, you know what, we need to that's good stuff. I like that. So the Orr Missouri Tigers, 2:45 kickoff, and it's coming up here shortly, take on the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Yeah,
Pokes. Pokes. Why do they call them Pokes? You know that?
I should know this because my wife went there.
Oh no.
And it's another term for cowboy, Poke.
Right.
That's all I got.
You know what I do know is they don't like when you call them Okie Light. They don't like that.
Oh no. Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that won't, you won't get out of Stillwater if you do that.
And no, but good news is you never want to go into Stillwater. So
I've been there once.
Yeah.
I've never gone back.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. So Missouri right now ranked number 23 in the college football playoff rankings. Take on a 6-6 Oklahoma State team. They are favored by 9 points. The over-under actually has dropped a point. It's about 72 right now, and that's partially probably due to the weather, because these are two teams that each of them, when they get rolling, can really do some damage. The Oklahoma State team is interesting because go through some of their scores, and they have either been really good offensively or average to bad, right? They only scored 17 points against an average to bad Texas Tech defense. They only scored, 12 against Kansas State. So you have that, and then match that up with scoring 45 and beating West Virginia, and match that up with scoring 38 and beating a top 15 ranked Texas team.
Yep.
You know, scoring 42 against Iowa State. They've scored, like Boise State, who was thought to be decent at the time, scored 44, you know. Go through a lot of their scores. Once they get rolling, holy crap, can they play. If you stop them and they don't catch a rhythm, this quarterback sort of loses it.
Yeah, Cornelius has had his issues when he's not good. I watched the Texas game, and they were rolling that night.
Yeah.
And it was impressive to watch them. But you mentioned Kansas State. You go, really?
Yeah. Kansas State
what happened
was bad.
There? Was it TCU? They did not play. They lost to TCU. But then you throw in, hey, they were within a point or two of Oklahoma.
Lost. So they lost to TCU by a touchdown, lost to Oklahoma by 1 point, and I think they went for two or something. There was something
there. Yep.
And then, so that's the weird thing, right? You go through all their scores. Iowa State was pretty good, but that doesn't match up with beating Texas and, losing to Oklahoma by 1 point and beating West Virginia. That all doesn't match up,
right?
Turning around and losing to Iowa State, getting crushed by Texas Tech. You know, a lot of their scores this year were, they're a very strange team.
Their tradition, too, under Gundy is, man, they can score, but they can't stop anybody.
Right.
And this year, they have only 5 interceptions, which will be a program low.
Yeah.
5. Think about that. 5 picks. In a conference that just throws the ball like crazy, and that's all I've come up with.
Yeah, they're throwing it to you half the time.
Yes. So, from that standpoint, you like your chances if you're Drew Locke. You got a group that's only picked off the opponent 5 times, and I'm really excited to see what Drew can do against this Mike Gundy defense. And if you say Mike Gundy defense, you go, well, you should put up a lot of points.
No doubt. And the one thing that they do really well is get to the quarterback. They're averaging 3.25 sacks per game. And that is, I think that leads the Big 12, or is darn close. 39 sacks on the year. And you're also going to play, they have 93 tackles for loss over almost 8 a game. So they do get to the quarterback. The question is, are you going to have, and this is how you, the best template for ever stopping a pass rush is watching the Patriots because it's James White out of the backfield over and over and over. So one of two things happens. Either James White gets out of the backfield scot-free and runs for 30, or the linebacker that was supposed to be blitzing has to peel off and go cover him, and now you're just matching up 5-on-4, right? That happens frequently. And so are you going to use your running backs in that same way? I think Tyler Beatty is the only one that really has the...
That's a good point.
You're not going to see that at Larry's Roundtree. You're not going to see that out of Demaria Crockett. Tyler Beatty, though, could be James White, and he's a freshman this year. He could be James White of NCAA football at some point if he continues to grow.
I like what he has shown so far, and you get him in space. He's quick. You know, he's not going to run a 4-3 on you, but he's quick and kind of like a Darren Sproles.
Yeah, he's got great balance, too.
Yeah. I mean,
he won his pants are down if you watched the last game.
Yes, no doubt about that. I've never seen that, by the way. Even as it happened, I'm going, did I just see that right?
Yeah.
I've never seen that in any football game I've ever watched.
Do you know how difficult that is to do? Because, like, I've worn those pants. I know they're not just like, this isn't like elastic basketball shorts.
Right.
You have a belt that is hooked into your pants. Like, it's attached to your pants, right? It's like you don't have an outside belt that could be like pulled out. It's actually attached to the pants, and you pull it tight. To be able to do that, along with what is really tight, your girdle and all that,
right?
I have no idea how that's possible.
I still to this day, I forget who was doing the game. I even think they were like, and okay,
full moon tonight, boys.
Yeah, full moon out there. What happened? So yeah. So, I give him credit. He kept running.
He sure did. And he really does have great balance. That is the difference between good running backs and great running backs. A guy that you just can't get him off his feet, right? Marshawn Lynch, it ain't that fast. But have you ever seen him actually fall down?
No.
Normally it's four or five guys push him out of bounds.
Right.
And it's just, you can't teach that kind of balance. And those are the guys that should have been in the UFC probably. You just can't take him down.
True.
I'm serious about that. It's a very... very, very strange deal. So what I'm looking for is more than anything, yes, we know about Tyler Beatty. We know Larry Roundtree is a 1,000-yard guy. We know Crockett has been a 1,000-yard guy. Mm-hmm. We know the offensive line's good. Trevor Sims is coming back next year, he announced. That's a huge deal. First team all SEC offensive guard. You know the offensive line's gonna be good. Emmanuel Hall should be playing. I was out of practice a couple weeks ago. He was out there flying around. They're going to have their guys. What I'm really looking for is the younger guys in the defensive backfield continuing their step forward. And they've had a few weeks of practice now. So typically, assuming that Odom does it the same way that I think most schools do, you play the younger guys and you treat it as kind of a spring ball for the younger guys for both practices. You get 15 more practices. So, and that's exactly what you get in the spring. So that's why it's such a big deal for the improvement of your team to make a bowl game. And typically, the entrenched starters, like after my sophomore year, I really didn't ever practice in a bowl practice again. And really not that much in spring. Because spring and bowl practice are for the development of the guys behind you. You have developed and you're running basic fundamental stuff. So you get your work in, but you're out there working on different things, and they know you got it. But there are guys in the defensive backfield now that are the young guys, and they're thrusted into playing because the older guys are not very good. Those are the guys that I need to see continue to take a step forward. Joshua Bledsoe and DeMarcus Acy, who, by the way, was very, very good. Go look at some of the advanced stats. His
got a lot better as the season went on.
And when the ball's there to be contested, he had the highest rate in the SEC. Like, if he's there and the ball's there, he has the highest rate. So you get a group of guys who desperately need that improvement, and they needed to have been the guys also getting the most of the reps. Because you saw early on in the season, some of the older guys, Cam Hilton never did turn the corner. And he's not a guy I wanted to see out there.
Right.
Bledsoe started to turn the corner. He really did. And in fact, he made some of your most important plays down the stretch.
The defense as a group got better, and a lot of that has to do with the secondary getting better.
Mm-hmm.
There was no doubt the front seven could play, and they were going to be good enough to not be embarrassing.
Yeah.
It was all a question about the back four, and could they get better, or would they improve, however you wanted to look at it. And the young guys have gotten better. It wasn't the guys that were there before. The young guys come in, took their jobs because they kept improving and they got good enough to where they can, you know, not embarrass. I know it sounds silly, but there is a lot of, you just didn't want to get embarrassed in the back. And just, you know, keep guys in front of you and not get, keep getting beat. And as the season went along, they got better and better.
I asked Coach Odom the other day, who is the guy I don't know the name of that's going to be really good? So it wasn't like, here's the guy.
Right.
He thought for a minute and he said, oh yeah, Jarvis Ware, who you've not heard his name before, have you?
No.
Neither have I.
I was just going to say, Jarvis Ware. I did not.
He sounds like an old running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. Jarvis Ware is a freshman corner.
Corner, okay.
Who he thinks is going to be dynamite. Now, that depends upon his own development and working True. Hard and smarts and all. There's a ton that goes into it. But he's long. I think he's, we'll see what his, he's around 6'1", but he's skinny, 175.
Is he really 6'1"?
Well, Odom said he's closer to 6'2".
Okay, that's, if he is, great. I remember Greg Taylor, the kid from East St. Louis, they kept listing him as 6'1", when he never played at Mizzou, but he was a secondary guy.
Yep.
And then when he showed up, he was 5'10". I was like, wait a minute, every recruiting thing I ever saw said he was 6'1", now he's 5'11".
Yeah.
So that's why I say, is he really a legit? But if Odom says that, then okay.
He said to me, 6'2"-ish.
Okay.
He said we know DeMarcus Acey's 6'2".
Right.
That dude is tall yep. and long. Ware is listed at 6'1", 185. And he said he's long. He's got, and you see him out there, but he's like, that's a kid who, when he's right, and if he improves, mm-hmm. can really make a difference. So I bring that up to say this. Next year, you have Christian Holmes, who was infinitely better than Adam Sparks this year.
Yep.
They're both sophomores. You're going to see a lot more Holmes. You had Cam Hilton, who needs to be out in place, needs to be Joshua Bledsoe.
Right.
Tyree Gillespie
yep.
made two of the bigger plays of the season in the same game early on in the Tennessee game.
Mm-hmm.
And then DeMarcus Acey, who will be a senior next year. And then if you add Jarvis Ware as a third corner, potentially your nickel guy or your dime, whatever you,
right.
you want to look at this. That's actually a really solid back four.
I like that.
I want to see that on display. You're not going to see Jarvis Ware, but these are young guys. I want to see that on display against Oklahoma State. That's what I'm looking for today because this is a jump, and young guys oftentimes, depending on, this is a little bit unfair because as a sophomore, you could say, well, I was just a sophomore and you're not focused, and in the Insight Bowl, I had 15 catches for 150 yards, played the best statistical game of my life. So, I was focused just fine, right? So you can't just say, yeah, young guys, you know, you got to get them refocused. Mm-hmm. I was the most focused guy on the team. I just wasn't that good most of the time. But I was darn focused, right? So it's not
I was in the right spot. I just couldn't execute.
I couldn't catch the ball. I couldn't jump high enough to go get the ball. I couldn't run by anybody if I ever did catch the
Give
ball.
Yourself more credit than that, but okay.
So anyway, it's not always fair to say, I got to get young guys to focus. You really got to get college kids to focus, period. You know, it's like, what's the difference between 18 and 22? They're all out there drinking. And I think this is really important to him for game 9. I want to see those four really play. And then you're going to have to figure out what to do with your linebackers next year after losing Terez Hall. Maybe Nick Bolton steps in and he's that guy with mm-hmm. Cale Garrett. Ronnell Perkins is already basically replaced Brandon Lee.
The kid who was hurt, is he a middle linebacker though?
Who's that?
Gosh, I cannot remember his name. Was he the kid that was from, not the kid from Indianapolis. There was a
Brandon Lee?
No, I'm not thinking of Lee.
He's the indie guy.
There's a kid who came in. No, I think he's an Alabama linebacker from the state of Alabama. Not
yeah.
Came in this year, but I think he hurt his knee. Didn't even get a chance to get a sniff.
I'm not sure you're talking about.
I'll have to look it up. But
okay,
go ahead.
No, I'm kind of rolling through the roster here, and it's a preview, but it's not a preview of the game.
Right.
Here's what I want to see. I need to see Cale Garrett continue being exactly who Cale Garrett is. That's probably his ceiling, and you'll take that every day of the week. A guy that doesn't miss any tackles,
right.
Guy that's in the right place all the time, and continually is consistent. He's not going to be Terez Hall. He's not going to make these crazy out-of-this-world plays. He's going to be in the right spot all the time, and he's going to make the plays that are there to be made. And then you have to see some of your younger defensive linemen. Trey Williams, who knows what's going to happen with him? He is suspended indefinitely at this point. Hasn't been kicked off the team officially, but if that actually goes through, that was a weird thing because the prosecuting attorney said, you know, we're not going to press charges because there's, you know, you could never get it through And then they press charges. So right. Who knows what's going to happen with him? He's not going to play in this game. You have Akili Byers, who was arguably your best defensive lineman by the defensive end by the end of the year. Chris Turner's still out there for next year. Jordan Elliott needs to be playing a lot. Elliott is good enough, I think, honestly, in any given lineup to be a defensive end. He's that athletic. And then you'll have Terry Beckner Jr. and Walter Powell more in the middle this year. I just need to see a group of guys out there defensively. We know what you got on the offense. You have legitimate. We'll see what happens with Alberto, whether he's coming back or not. You have three legit running backs. You have a quarterback for next year. You have three returning offensive linemen, the three best ones from this past year. You have really good receivers. I was out there watching. You know, Barrett Bannister's coming around as a slot guy. Dominic Jacinto's been very good. Rashad Floyd will get his legs back a little bit. Jalen Knox, Cam Scott. You got a bunch of dudes out there. So, defensively, in this game, needs to be a step forward into catapulting you into next year. With Kelly Bryant at the helm and what you have returning, you will be ranked to start the year.
Oh, yeah.
And with a good showing today, we see how important it is to start the year ranked, right? It's like perception means a lot in college football. So, if you start in the top 20 instead of just sneaking in at 25, if you sneak in at 25 and you have a rough showing, you're out. If you're at 18 to start the year, people are like, eh. Okay, they're 18. They're in there. If you're 15 to 18, which is not out of the question. You go out there and dominate Oklahoma State and return virtually everybody with Kelly Bryant headlining your class coming in, you're in pretty good shape.
You're going to get a lot of buzz with Bryant.
Did you find the guy you were talking about?
No, I'll look it up here in the break.
All right.
Get the break soon.
We'll figure it out. We will go to break. Back shortly. It's Hardline.
Welcome back to the Hardline. Enter at your own risk.
Hey, welcome back to the Hardline, 5-9 of the Fan, Kevin Esten, 5-9ofthefan.com. TJ Moe, Jim Huer here with you until 3 o'clock. Thank you for hanging out with us, everybody. Fun day, big day. Your Missouri Tigers kick off 2:45 p.m. It appears, Jim, and this changes by the moment, but it appears that the weather is clearing up and they will not be playing in the South Carolina monsoon-like conditions that caused them to lose a game earlier in the year that I would say in a lot of people's minds actually put Barry Odom on the hot seat.
It did put him on the hot seat, but my goodness, don't you just sit there and go, oh, what if he could have, would have, should have?
Totally.
Especially after watching what happened to South Carolina in their bowl game where,
shellac
didn't show up, whatever you want to call it. Once again, they have trouble with offense. But, man, the weather's good today. It should be a lot of fun down there. Hopefully the field's in good shape. The water's not going to, that has fallen, isn't going to affect it too much.
Yeah.
Could be fun.
High of 67 today and will not get there during game time. It's interesting. I don't know when that 67 is actually happening, but it's weird down south. At 1 o'clock, there is an 80% chance of rain. At 2 o'clock, it appears the chance of rain is around zero. So. They will be either catching the very tail end of this or they won't be getting any at all. And it'll be about 58 degrees. And if you can just keep the footballs dry, they're going to be in really good shape.
Bring the good gloves.
Yeah, no kidding.
Dry gloves.
Just gloves in general. That is absolutely in the cards there. You know, I'm interested. It was Hawkman who wrote an article on Drew Lock. I guess last night. I saw it this morning. And it really is a great article. And what the greatness of the article is not so much, in-depth, crazy, not a ton of quotes and all that. He had a few, like Chase Daniel and how he keeps up with Drew and all that. But it was more like the thing that stuck out to me was, he's taking a page out of our president's book. But he said, Drew Lock made Mizzou cool again. And he kind of did. I mean, you have sort of his silly little backpack thing and all that. But what he did was, even when Missouri was not very good, and the team hasn't been very good for a few years now, he was out there throwing 44 touchdowns. And he was lighting the world on fire. And he was, now especially this year, getting attention for all the right reasons. And it's going to be, just wait till draft day. Because I believe Dwayne Haskins a junior, so I'm not sure he's declaring. I would imagine he's going to declare. But if he were to stay, you are legitimately looking at a one-man race because Justin Herbert, the Oregon quarterback, who was the consensus number one by most scouts, is going back to Oregon. And the only other guy in the conversation, in reality, is Will Grier. And in a lot of minds, he's a second rounder. He would probably, obviously, as people fall out, come back up in the first round. But I think you're to a place now where when it's a one-man race, this is like Cam Newton circa 2011, right? You had Blaine Gabbert there, but was he ever really a threat to take Cam Newton? You had Jake Locker, but was he really ever a threat to take Cam? Like, it was Cam Newton was going to be the number one pick.
Right.
That would be Drew Lock this year.
I kind of agree with you. I was going through this yesterday, and then we finally saw what the draft first round is going to look like, and I'm going, oh, there's a real good chance if Drew Lock's your guy, he's going number one overall.
Isn't that crazy?
And you go, oh, come on. But if you look at it, Arizona, they desperately need what they think is a franchise quarterback. Well, guess what? If Drew Lock is the number one overall pick or overall quarterback, he's going number one.
Well, not to Arizona because they have Josh Rosen after last
year. That's true.
But they would trade it to a team that desperately wants it.
Yes.
And then if you're because they just fired Steve Wilks. Even after one season, they fired Steve Wilks. So what they would do here is they'd say, we need picks. We're going to go the Cleveland Browns. Look what's worked in Cleveland. Stockpiling picks. And by the way, they have a ton of picks this year, and that's a pretty good football team.
Mm-hmm.
And if Hugh Jackson were fired before week one, that's a playoff team. Yeah, you know, that was a team that they were a half game under 500. They finished 7-8-1, you know?
Right.
So that's a pretty good team. And what they did was they stockpiled draft picks, and then they basically cleared cap space to go sign the Jarvis Landrys of the world and go out and sign the Carlos Hydes of the world. And they put together a real good team. And then they got a top draft pick with Baker Mayfield. Now, I assume Arizona thinks they have that in Josh Rosen. Now you have to go and figure out how to fix your offensive line. That is garbage.
You think so, but if the new guy comes in and doesn't.
No, that's possible.
You know, and I agree with you. Rosen, I kind of overlooked a Rosen, and that's on me. The Giants need franchise quarterback.
Oh, Jacksonville needs one. Yep.
If you're pointing trading up, somebody might just go, hey, that's the guy. He's the best guy in this draft. I want him. I'm taking him.
Yeah, so number one, probably, unless what we're talking about happens, is going to end up being Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa has sat out. If he's fully healthy, people have seen what Joey Bosa has been able to do. They got good family genes. Their dad played in the NFL. They got some, you know, everything they need. He's probably your number one. And then you have some other guys, Quinnen Williams with the Alabama defensive lineman who just throws people for fun. You have some guys. But to your point, the top quarterback is always in contention for number one overall.
Absolutely.
Always.
No doubt.
So the top receiver, probably not, right? Jeremy Maclin was really good. He still went 18th or whatever he was. You know, you got some dudes. If you are a pass rusher or a quarterback, you are always in contention for number one.
Absolutely true. So you like Drew's chances. Here's the thing. You mentioned Will Grier. Good player. I think still part of what is the West Virginia system. I still believe that. There's a little bit of Holgorsen factor in there with me. So again, not saying that he might not go ahead of Drew Lock, but if you're putting those two together and I'm factoring that in right now, system for Holgorsen's always been pretty good for most quarterbacks.
Could I argue the same thing for Drew Lock?
But I see more of the, there's a little bit more of a running game with Missouri than supposedly with West Virginia.
Absolutely.
And being from an SEC team, they don't get the reputation of being that Big 12 offense where you're just chucking the ball all over the place.
Except that Josh Heupel is that guy. Josh Heupel did it himself, and then he implemented that offense at Oklahoma. Then he did it again at Utah State. Then he did it here.
But this year, this season with Locke under Dooley makes him more of an NFL-ready quarterback than opposed to
had he not been there. Oh, I fully agree with that. However, there are a ton of similarities in the offense that Dooley kept in.
There are, for that reason.
Now, the difference, and so some of these remarks, this is why I wish some quarterbacks would just, as a member of the media, I love that they spill their guts. As a person who's like, why'd you do that? I wonder this. At one point, Drew Lock came in and said, you know, it's different this year. The reads are harder because last year was all pretty much 7-man protection, and so I had a lot of time and less reads. And this year, it's five-man protection, so I got more reads and less time. I'm like, yeah, bro.
That's how it works.
Hello? Nobody gets seven-man protection. Right. No one.
That's true.
Look at the NFL today. Who's getting seven-man protection? You got five-man protection, and your sixth man is the guy that you have to get the ball to in a hurry if they bring six or more.
Correct.
That's the game, dude. There, you know, and then this is where you got to be an athlete. Remember, Drew Locke is a guy that had basketball scholarships. You don't can't be a slow loser and get basketball scholarships. Drew Locke has some athletic ability. So if it's they always used to tell you this, and this is more of a high school thing, but they'll tell you this in college and the NFL too. Okay, so we got five. Number six is yours, meaning either beat him with the pass or beat him with your legs. Right? It's a
true.
They have defensively if they're going to man up on everybody. They have one more than you do if you're not going to be a threat. So they're playing 11 on 10 all the time. That's why we've gone to all these offenses going to these zone reads and these RPOs and different things that allow the quarterback to become a threat in instances because you're no longer playing 11 on 10.
Yeah, and let's face it, the quarterback position, the way it's played in college, is so much more difficult to portray what that player will be in the pros now, as opposed to 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, interesting.
For that reason. At least I feel that way because you're evaluating, again, run pass option guys.
Uh-huh.
It's not necessarily that same offense in the NFL. There are some offenses running it now. For instance, Baltimore now with Lamar Jackson. The reality is that doesn't last very long, or at least it hasn't had a long shelf life because your quarterback, if he runs that way in the NFL, he looks good for about 3 weeks, and maybe the fourth or fifth week is where he gets dinged up. You go, well, we can't keep running him out there. We saw it for a long time with the Big 12 quarterbacks, you know, the guys from Texas Tech or Graham Harrell's and all that, chucking the ball, and you go, wow, he's got a great arm. He can do this. He can do that. But when you get in the NFL, it's different. And I think because the way the college game is played now at that position, it's more difficult to try and really say, this is a can't-miss guy in the NFL.
Yeah, the last can't-miss guy, and maybe it's Sam Darnold, so we'll see. But the last can't-miss guy was Andrew Luck.
Yep, I agreed 100%. When you saw Luck, you go, oh, he's an NFL quarterback all the way. Pocket passer, everything.
Is perfect.
Yep.
And he was playing in the Jim Harbaugh Stanford offense that didn't have any RPOs, and there was none.
Right.
Now, even Shea Patterson, they run that a little bit more now. I would have agreed with you. I think I agree with your overall premise. I would have fully agreed with you 5 years ago. The NFL, to me, has adopted enough of that now.
They've changed.
You're watching. I said this on the air last week. Lamar Jackson's not going to be in this league in 5 years. And it's not because he's not good and doesn't have skills. It's because he's going to get crushed. RG3 is out of the league largely because he wouldn't stop running and he got hurt. Vince Young's out of the league because he couldn't pass and adapt. He was rookie of the year at one point. Colin Kaepernick, same thing, right? The only one of that group that sort of came in around that same time that has sustained it is Russell Wilson. And that's because he's Houdini and he's a pass first guy that creates to pass. He doesn't create to run. And then he runs in order to take advantage of when you're covering the pass too much. And he's doing it with no receivers. I mean, what he's done is impeccable. Outside of that, you get a bunch of guys that come in and they're really hard to stop because the NFL coaches haven't had a chance to go create a playbook on them yet. And so they succeed, and that's why Baltimore's dangerous this year. Baltimore, if you're going to win it with Lamar Jackson, it's going to be this season.
One guy I will add to that list, not as effective as Russell Wilson, but Cam Newton's lasted longer than I thought. I'm not saying he's a great passer, but he's become a good enough passer to be useful in this league. And if you surround him with the right pieces, he's proven he can be a winner. He is better than I thought he would. When they draft him number one overall, he's got all the tools, you know, all the intangibles. I was a little skeptical of whether or not he was going to be able to pass enough, I mean, accurate enough. He's done enough. He's been very successful in this league, far more successful than I thought. If you make the playoffs, you get to Super Bowls and things like that, you're doing pretty good.
Cam Newton has had one spectacular year, and his yards per attempt that year, interestingly, 7.8, that was only actually his second best of his career. 2012, he had a really good year. They went 15-1 in 2015. That was largely on the back of him and a spectacular defense.
That helps.
And
see Lamar Jackson this year.
Bingo.
You know?
That's right. But even that year, He didn't complete 60% of his passes.
Again, just enough to get by, but he's, I never would have thought he would have been as successful as he has been.
Yes, so.
And he's not great, but this, he's never had super, super star receivers.
No, but he had Kelvin Benjamin, who he largely makes worthless. seriously, I think Kelvin Benjamin, like, had he started his career somewhere else, would have been better. Then he goes to Buffalo, and he's worthless there, too. Right. And then he's in Kansas City and, you know, just trying to pick it up this year. We'll see. He could have been a lot better receiver than he's been. Same thing with, like, Ted Ginn Jr. Like, okay, well, Ted Ginn is a speed burner.
He did have Olsen as his fallback. That helped.
No doubt. So the question with Cam Newton is, at this year, he started 14 games. He was 6-8. And he had his best completion percentage by a country mile. Now, that's largely because he threw it to Christian McCaffrey every play.
That helps.
Christian McCaffrey, you know, when you throw it in 3 yards. Now, granted, 4 years ago, he couldn't throw it 3 yards. He had, when they were getting ready to draft Christian McCaffrey, everybody questioned it because he could not complete a pass to a running back. That was one of his big
problems. Right.
But he was almost 68% this year. And they started out really good, and then they were arguably the worst team in the league over the back half of the season.
And he's compromised a little bit right now, too.
He's always compromised, right?
Part of that is that's part of playing that position the way he plays it. But he's so much bigger than any of the other guys that have come out, than, let's say, Lamar Jackson or Robert Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
He's been able to survive enough, I really believe.
Let me ask you a question here. We'll go back to Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that... So Chase Daniel, I actually think, probably has the admiration and respect of every head coach and general manager in the league, because he has about half the tools of some of these guys, and he's better than most of them. You know, all the backups and everybody. But, so I think that's probably a positive, different regime, certainly, than what they're dealing with now, and different regime than Blaine. But do you think Blaine Gabbert's lack of success will make anybody think twice about Drew Lock?
It's funny you say that, because I actually heard Clay Travis this morning talking about Locke, and he said, and he was comparing him to the other Missouri quarterbacks. I'm like, I don't think you can do that with Drew Locke. Because he was like, well, you know, I'm not really sold on him because you had Gabbert, and he went through, you know, he said Daniel's been okay.
Oh, interesting. He switched his position because he has
maintained... I heard a little bit of it this morning. I didn't hear the whole conversation, okay. But he kind of, you know, was like, well, I'm not really sold that he's all that
yet. For about a year now, he's been convinced that he's going to be the first quarterback taken. That's been his position.
And
so maybe he's just pissed because Tennessee's his team and he had to watch Blaine.
That could be. But if they do look at it that way, I think they're looking at it wrong.
I agree.
You have to look at Drew Lock as his own guy. And the biggest point is probably it's a complete different coaching staff he's pretty much worked with. Oh, he had Pinkel there early, but Barry Odom's group, you can tell me there are similarities, and there probably are, but it's just not the same. It's not the same thing. He's not even the same thing that Chase was working with.
Oh,
no. I mean, Chase was, it was throw the football, man. It was just, you know, toss it here, toss it there. Ball never hit the ground. We know that whole story.
And Gabbert, that was under Dave Christensen. That was 3 or 4 coordinators ago.
Gabbert was a completely different player. Yeah. Stronger arm, but, I mean, he ran the ball more. He could move. He was maybe as good as an athlete. Next, he wasn't as good as Brad Smith, but he had better legs and more running ability, I think, than obviously Chase did. And
oh, I would even with that. Chase was a good runner.
You really think so? Yeah, I always thought Blaine was more of a polished runner than Chase. Maybe it's just because Chase just was able to throw the ball better.
Yeah, I think Chase is a better runner. However, this is where you're right about Blaine. In a straight line, he would outrun every quarterback that's come through the league, except for Brad.
Right.
I think
Brad's on his
Corby
own
Jones.
Planet.
Yeah. Blaine, when he would go full speed, see ya. He was gone. But Blaine would also have to come to a complete stop to take a right, and that didn't work.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. He was really powerful, though, once he got that head of steam going.
Yeah. He also
got his shoulder hurt a few times because of it.
Yeah.
Trying to stick his nose in there, you go, oh, you would have been better off sliding.
He didn't, Blaine rarely ran. Now, James had that issue. James routinely.
Yeah, James was a.
Hurt himself trying to be a fullback. But James also had some different skills. And if James just passed, he'd have been half the player. So he had to do that.
Right.
Blaine, Blaine, the extension of the run game was me, right? It was me and Michael Agnew. Like, if we needed 3 yards, Blaine didn't have to run. He just tossed it
up.
That
is true.
So, different. I think Drew is a better fluid athlete than Blaine, meaning his running ability overall. I think Blaine's significantly fast. Blaine legitimately could fly when you get him out and run and see you. But I think Drew, the thing that can unlock, well, let's say this. If you gave Blaine Drew Lock's touch, he'd be an NFL starter for 15, 20 years.
Agreed, 100%. Because, we kind of saw it last night.
Yeah, and I think Blaine has a better, quicker release. They were going over that last night. Like, he's in the 0.3 second range. I mean, that's top of the top of the top of the NFL. And Blaine has a better, maybe I shouldn't say better, but at least equal to, perhaps better, short game. Of like, if Blaine wanted to put it on my outside shoulder, right on the corner, an inch outside of the guy's hand, that's where he put it every single time. Now, I think as time's gone on, you know, the game's a little bit faster, certainly, but also, like, when you get pushed back into the secondary role, your game just kind of, like, if Blaine were a starter and had been a starter from day one, it would be the exact same. Blaine had, like, pinpoint accuracy in the short game, but get him past, like, 12, 14 yards, starts to fade a little bit because he could never drop it in a bucket. He could, if you put something 50 yards away, put a helmet on top of a dummy, he'd knock the helmet off, but he could do it on a line drive. If you said, hey, throw it over the top of those electricity lines and then knock it off, he wouldn't.
That makes sense. And I saw that last night. There was a couple guys he would have hit him in stride, would have been catches, and it was just a hair behind. If he leads them and puts it out in front of them, it's a catch. Whereas if it was just a tad behind, and they were all like 15 yard outs, crossing routes, whatever.
Yeah. And last night it was about the pick with about 10 minutes left.
Yep.
Guy's wide open, but he tried to throw a bullet.
Yes, he did.
Just lofted it. Lofted right over his head. I mean, the guy was open by 8 yards.
Yep. You see, he would have lifted it over the linebacker there, It was a linebacker. Yeah.
I mean, so that's been his struggle. That's not been Drew's struggle. So Drew's struggle, I think, is going to be the same as any other quarterback going in the league. Can you slow the game down enough to make the reads in a faster game? Can you really learn defense? Now, it's interesting because you listen to guys. We'll get into everything, but you listen to Gundy and you listen to everybody. He's like, Drew Lock just picks apart your defense. Which I don't know that I totally agree with.
I've never really come across. He just picked him apart.
Chase did that.
Chase would find the right guy
every
and the
time.
Right matchup. Drew is more, that's my guy. And if he's got you beat, I'm going to him down on the go routes.
That's right. If Emmanuel Hall got injured and Drew stayed the same, this is a different conversation. When his guy was gone, he wasn't picking you apart.
No.
Now, granted, I've not gone back and done a ton of film study. You have to go get coaches film and all stuff we don't really have access to. But on any given day, you could do it with Chase. Show me the All-22 tape. And I'm like, oh, yeah. He threw it to the guy that was most open 93% of the plays.
Yep.
Like the most open, this guy. Yeah, that guy had him by 2 yards, but this guy had him by 7. And he threw it to the guy who was open by 7. And he did it, you know,
every
plus.
Time.
That is sort of the difference there. And I think Drew, when you get down to it, has all the physical tools in the world. And if you dive into that, and boy, is he going to look good in shorts and on for the NFL Combine. By the way, Mike Mayock, the new general manager for the Oakland Raiders. So Mayock will not be breaking him down on NFL Network this year. But he might be.
I will miss that.
He may be drafting him.
Yeah, you're right.
They don't seem too enamored with Derek Carr out there.
It's amazing. Everything there is falling apart. There is every player that's
on purpose,
been on that.
I think, though.
I think they're tearing it down. I really think that's been Gruden's thing from day one.
That's why you get a 10-year contract.
And, I mean, you look at the players he's traded away, you go, oh, my gosh, how and why? You know, so many guys that he's moved have helped other teams. You go, you could have had, I think he just said, you know what, we're starting over, regardless.
Yeah. If you caught Gruden in a moment of honesty, he would tell you that, yes, Khalil Mack is an otherworldly talent, but he's not going to be that good by the time we're actually good.
There's truth
so
in that.
Why would I sign him to a 5-6 year deal with all the money that he wants so that by the time we're good in 5 or 6 years, he's old and not very good anymore. That doesn't make any sense. Same thing with Amari Cooper, honestly.
Yeah, Coop's the same way. I just, it remains yet to be seen if that actually comes through. And if Gruden's way of doing things still translates to this NFL that we're in right now.
You know, you wonder with him because I don't know if he necessarily got left behind having stayed in the game. When you stay on Monday Night Football and you're in contact with all the coaches.
You would hope so.
And there's something about staying sharp. Now, we're going to see. There are 8 openings in the NFL right now. So they're going to be grabbing guys from everywhere. Last time there was 8 openings was, I think, 2013. And that's when you saw this. It was a very weird year. That's when they took Tressman from the CFL.
Yes.
That's when they took.
Bears are regretting that.
Chip Kelly.
Yes.
With the Eagles. And then Doug Maroon. So they took 2 college guys and a CFL guy. And that's because you can't just keep recycling all of these NFL guys all the time.
No, you have to go in a different direction.
You going to go take Vance Joseph and hope he works for you?
No. unfortunately, a guy
Jackson, huh?
No, Hugh Jackson. Todd Bowles is,
he's done.
He was hot, but.
Steve Wilks, never get another
no.
job.
No.
One and done.
Yep. Yeah, you can't recycle any of those guys that are getting let go right now.
No. All right, I think Chris Kerber's coming up in a bit, yes?
Yep.
He talked to Frank Cusimano in the Hollywood Casino press box a little bit earlier to preview tonight's game. So he's going to come up. We're going to replay that. That'll take us to the end of the show. And then you guys better be in front of the TV watching your Missouri Tigers in what is hopefully a decent weather day down in Memphis for the Liberty Bowl.
Looking forward to that. Looking forward to Missouri putting up points and the Tiger defense coming up with some turnovers.
Oh, yeah.
To win this game.
Yep.
I feel another Shane Ray moment coming.
Oh, I hope it's not a Shane Ray moment because that means the game's really close and the spread is 9 points. So if you need a scoop and score to win the game, that's not ideal.
Okay. All right. I just like the dramatic.
Shane Ray, by the way, he was quoted today. It was kind of interesting. He said it's. Because his option was not picked up,
right.
He's going to go hit the open market. He said, it'll be nice to be somewhere where there's not a preconceived notion about you.
Some truth in that, maybe.
Yeah.
I would like to see him get a chance to play, though.
Well, dude, they got Bradley Chubb out there. They got, what's his name? The second best passer. Von Miller, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, they don't need him, really.
Right.
Go find a place that needs him.
That's what I mean. See where he can go play.
Yeah.
Give him a chance.
All right, here is Chris Kerber previewing tonight's game for your St. Louis Blues.
All right, let's switch topics and welcome to the conversation the voice of the St. Louis Blues, Chris Kerber. Chris, good to be with you. How are you?
Martin, Frank, I'm doing great. How are you guys today?
Very good. Much to discuss. The Saturday performance was just crazy because you started to feel like, hey, they've kind of turned the corner, and we've kind of felt that way quite a few times after 2-game win streaks. How'd you see Saturday unfold, Chris?
Unfortunately, it unfolded because it didn't start right. They weren't able to kill that first penalty of the hockey game, and you just kind of went, uh-oh, right at that moment in time. When it's one of your top veteran guys in Alexander Steen, unfortunately, with an Aaron High stick on the opening shift, and it just kind of stung them, I think. And 5-on-5, honestly, I thought the team played well. I mean, they were right there with them, and you had chances. You hit a post again. You lead the league in post hit this year, actually, and couldn't get that equalizer goal. And I thought 5-on-5, but unfortunately, they just couldn't stay out of the penalty box against that Pittsburgh team. And then on top of not staying out of the penalty box, the penalty kill structurally just went south. Unfortunately, had a huge impact in that game. And, we talked about prior to that game, look, the team's been trending in the right direction in some things. And you win that game and all of a sudden you've won 7 of 10 and you're going, holy cow, what's going on? And things are trending right. It's the type of loss that they have seemed to find their way into, especially on home ice, that's a little mind-boggling. That kind of makes it feel like they kind of have to climb a bigger hill the next game versus just continuing to trend better, if that makes any sense.
Curbs having Robbie Fabry back. I know he's battled injuries on and off, but what can he do? What can he add?
Well, they're going to put him and start him on the fourth line. I hope that we see him climb up the lineup in a real hurry here tonight. He's going to bring some speed. He's going to bring that work ethic. He's going to bring that tenacity. Robbie has to play, start playing some smarter hockey. And what I mean by that is, you know, you want him to be aggressive. You want him to be, you know, have that work ethic that he's got. But he can't try and run over guys like Tyler Myers and guys that are just outmanning him size wise. And that's unfortunately what led to his injury. So he's going to have to play a little bit smarter, maybe a little bit cautious, live to fight another day. But it's going to be great to have him back in there. I wouldn't mind even seeing him get some power play time right off the bat and change what has just been not very good power play for the Blues. So if he stays in the fourth line role for the entire game, that's a good thing because that means the other lines are going.
What do we know about this Ranger team that comes in 16-14-7? I know Kevin Shattenkirk has been sidelined with a shoulder injury, and he may be returning tonight.
Yeah, there's a chance Kevin Shattenkirk could get back in the lineup. He's been injured. He's also been a healthy scratch at a couple of different times. It's a Rangers team that maybe a little bit behind the Blues, supposedly, in their transition process, but are trying to do it while staying competitive. They got a couple of young rookies in Hedel and Howden, and two rookies that are 20 years of age or younger that have over 13 points already on the season. They've got a new head coach that came in from the college ranks that is coaching this team well. If you play well for him, he's giving you more ice time. If you're not playing well, he's not giving you ice time. But he's got them playing some aggressive hockey, and at a couple games over 500, probably a little bit better season than they were thinking to have. And one of those reasons that it's happening is their goaltender. Henrik Lundqvist has given him a chance to win almost every single night, and that is helping a young team along.
Chris Kerber with us, Blues Rangers tonight, New Year's Eve tilt at Enterprise Center. Tell us about the goalie, Evan Fitzpatrick, and what does it mean that he got the call? We've talked so much about Ville Husso, and now we've seen Binnington. We're going to see Fitzpatrick at least called up. I don't know that we'll see him play much, but what do you know about this kid?
Well, this is you shouldn't see him play much. This isn't a call-up because this guy's been lighting it up. It's a call-up because of the injury to Ville Husso. So Ville Husso is going to be out 10-14 days for San Antonio. That being the case, they wanted to get Jordan Binnington playing again, so you send Jordan Binnington down. He's able to get some games. The way the Blues' schedule is set up right now, you can continue to ride Jake Allen at least through the rest of this homestand until you get the back-to-back games in Philly and then home against Dallas that second week in January. So this is Jake Allen's team. Now, Evan Fitzpatrick was a second-round pick in 2016, and you got to love it when this kind of things happen. He's only 20 years old. He's a newbie, so he's from the what they call the Rock out there in Newfoundland. And he had played 14 games for Tulsa in the East Coast Hockey League, got called up because of the injury to Husso, got to play, and got called up when the Blues called up Binnington, and then got to play in a game and started and won his first American Hockey League start. So it has happened before. Within the span of 7 days, a guy has gone from the East Coast Hockey League to playing in a game in the National Hockey League. It doesn't happen often. To be blunt and honest, I hope we don't see it because that would mean things have gone south again, and the Blues need Jake to be good.
Last year at this time, Alex Pietrangelo was a scoring defenseman and one of the better defensemen in the league. How would you evaluate his play so far, and what do you think Saturday night in his comeback game?
Well, he played just about 20 minutes in that comeback game, Frank. I thought he played played okay, after missing 11 games. I don't think he's had a very good season at all. His season didn't start well, much like a lot of these other veteran guys, and it's been kind of a chase of your tail and get back in it ever since. So he's an important piece to this hockey team. You could see on the penalty kill why he was so important. I realize the last game was a bit of an anomaly, but the penalty killing was not trending well because he was out anyway. He has to find another level, and he has to play better. So do some of the other veterans on the team. I'm not as wild about the top tandem, to be honest with you. I don't know that I really like the pairing of Bouwmeester and Pietrangelo together. I think the Blues have tried it for several years, and I don't know that it's been an overly successful tandem. But I think Edmondson and Parayko have proven that they can handle some more minutes as well. And I think, like we saw in the last game, you could see some minute management of the defensive groupings the way they're paired up right now.
Kerbs, what do you hear about the mindset of Tom Stillman? Obviously, he's not going to pull a Dallas Stars deal and kind of rant and rave and nuke everybody. I don't see that out of him. But what do you think his level of frustration is with this team and this season?
You know what? I, honestly, I haven't talked to Tom about it, but knowing what I know about Tom, I can't imagine that he's happy. I would think he's pretty intense about what's going on. This was an unexpected, situation. The Blues find them in 2 games below 500, 5 games short of the midway point of the season, and just haven't been able to get on a bit of a run to climb back into the real picture of a playoff picture yet. So I have to think he's disappointed. I have to think that the pressure is on in certain areas. But he's also a calculated person when it comes to this thing. So we'll see how it goes. I think there's still a window here where the Blues have some time to see if this group can figure it out before Doug Armstrong has to start to pull in some triggers. And then, he will keep Tom abreast of what he's thinking as he moves forward and helping those decision processes.
Chris, good stuff. We will talk Thursday before the Stanley Cup champions come to town. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
All right, guys. Happy New Year. Be safe out there today and tonight, and we'll see you guys at the rink.
All right. Chris Kerber joining us, brought to you by Petromart. Petromart is a locally owned and operated family business that's been serving St. Louis for over 30 years. Each location is just as clean, fast, and friendly as the next, with 50 locations to serve you in a hurry. Petromart offers a wide selection of grab-and-go food items like hot and ready pizza, fresh fruit and salads. Petromart has something for everybody, and it's always prepared fresh and available around the clock. Petromart, a proud sponsor of Phillips 66 Gasoline and a proud sponsor of the St. Louis Blues.